VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 471, recorded on July 9th, 2017. The 71st edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 304th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. This week is the last week of the Sims 4 contest, and we have two people who entered. One is named Harry. The other is named Patrick. The first one is Patrick. So I'm going to roll a die. On a 1, 2, and 3, Patrick wins, and on a 4, 5, 6, Harry wins. So here we go. Harry wins. But don't worry, Patrick, I actually have two codes of The Sims 4, so I'm going to divide them, and you won't get the swag, but you will get The Sims 4. And if you already have The Sims 4, you can just give it to somebody.
That's very generous.
Just a warning, it is Origin only, so, you know. But then again, The Sims 4 always was, so. If you're willing to play or buy The Sims 4, then you have Origin.
Congrats, guys. Enjoy.
Yeah. Congrats.
So anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
I played a little bit of the Final Fantasy IV mobile port to the Steam. I guess be playing that. It's kind of interesting seeing it in its 3D form, and they changed a few things, but the story is basically the same. And I'm playing that before I play the Final Fantasy IV After Years, which is like the sequel to it, which also came out on mobile. And I just want to like refresh myself on the story before playing the sequel, because I never, you know, got to see that conclusion. So I'd like to do that, and that's what I'm doing now.
And how about you, TJ?
I've been playing through the Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy. I 100%ed the first game last night,
awesome.
Which was equal parts glorious and
frustrating.
Wonderful and soul shattering.
sort of like ukulele.
No, this was on a whole different level. Like,
whole there's level a better or whole level, different level worse.
A little of both. Like, I love the graphics. I love the graphics in Crash Bandicoot. It looks gorgeous. The music is remastered as well, and some of the tracks are just fun to listen to. However, they remastered the physics engine, and sometimes on certain jumps, momentum is sketchy, and the hitboxes on landing on ledges is sketchy, which on some levels makes for an extremely frustrating time. And I don't know if y'all know much about Crash Bandicoot, but there are some levels in the game where you need to complete the entire level without dying and break every box in order to get a special jewel, which will make platforms appear in other levels so you can collect jewels there. And when that is the case, and then you have to deal with terrible momentum issues that just murder you at every corner. I there were moments last night where I put the controller down, walked into my own room, closed the door, and just started screaming because I couldn't deal. It was a time.
Sounds like me playing XCOM 2.
I love the game. It felt good to finish it. But I also felt like I won, but what did I give up for it?
Part of your sanity.
I won, but at what cost?
Sounds like playing Dark Souls there.
Oh my god.
I mean, yeah, you won, but you're not celebrating. As for me, I've been playing XCOM 2. With the two DLC that were released after I first played it, because I bought the Ultra Special Super Duper Edition, so I was automatically had the season pass, but I never played any of the expansions, and it's okay. The one with Valen, which has three monsters that fight you one after the other, And the thing is that they act and move between each of your members' turns, which is really frustrating because they're moving. So I learned, you know what? I'm going to learn where the creature comes from. I'm going to have all my guys on Overwatch before triggering it so that when they come out, every single one of my team fires at it so that I don't have to worry about that. They move every time my team does one action. So I got around that. And I've also been playing Shadow of Mordor again because I decided to play the Bright Lord DLC. And I see where they got a lot of ideas for Shadow of War. A lot of the things that are in the Bright Lord DLC are stuff that we're going to be doing in Shadow of War, like establishing fortresses. It also told me what I already suspected, spoiler, I guess, for a three-year-old game. Celebrimbor is evil. He was corrupted by the One Ring, and when you were playing, and I knew this was happening in Shadow of Mordor, he was corrupted by the One Ring, and it's basically evil versus evil. And anybody who knows anything about the Lord of the Rings and Tolkienian myth is that anybody who wears the One Ring gets corrupted by it. And yeah. Celebrimbor he doesn't want to defeat Sauron, he wants to be Sauron. He just doesn't know it yet.
It's interesting you're also playing Shadow of Mordor too, because I don't know if I don't see it on our list here, but did you hear that you're going to be able to port your nemesis from Shadow of Mordor over Shadow of War?
That's the reason why I started playing again, also because I did the Nemesis Forge, and basically what it does is it looks at the most recent save file and it shows this is going to be your nemesis and this is going to be your closest ally that you can port over to a save. Now it only saves it when you quit. And the thing is, what it allows you to do is manipulate it. But you actually play the game. So if a guy keeps beating you, it's not a cheat, you know? And you can make someone else your nemesis and make someone else your friend. And, in terms of friend, mine is the Corpse Eater. And I think he's the one who can't talk. He just grunts and squeals and giggles all the time. So it's gonna be very interesting for your ally to be in Shadow of War with him, and I manipulated it so that my nemesis was one who has the last name of the friend. Now, just so you know, when they mean friend, I think they mean a pervy corpse fucker. Because if he kills you, one of the things he says is, "I always like the time after I kill you. It's a nice quiet time I get to spend with you." So yeah, he's doing things to your dead body. So that'll be an interesting nemesis to have.
That sounds terrifying.
Yeah. There's one Uruk who's a halfling lover, you know. And by that, he's actually a very nice guy. And there's also one who's the noble, and he's also a nice guy. But I picked the one who's pervy and weird and just, you know. Because I wanted to see what Shadow of War is going to do with him. Unfortunately, that's still 3 months away, but.
That's an interesting thing they decided to put in there, because that, I guarantee you that a lot of people jumped into Shadow of Mordor for that exact reason, just to figure out what they're doing with their nemesis and friend.
Yeah. Like I said, it's a long wait, though. It's been delayed, too. It's supposed to come out in August, and it's coming out in October, which is a shame. I mean, you know, Shadow of War has the potential to be an all-time great game. Not just game of the year, but of the past 10 years, if they do it right. And even if they do it wrong, even if they do 50%, it's still going to be fun. Because they're not messing with the formula that much.
Mm-hmm.
The only way it could be bad is if the PC version is a broken mess, but...
Yeah.
Hopefully the delay will help them find any bugs that they need to fix. That's what the delay is about.
Yeah, I think it is... Xbox Anywhere, so when I get the Xbox One version, I'll also have the PC version. Or the Windows 10 version.
Good.
What I did not know was that Crackdown 3 is also Xbox Anywhere. Which is...
Well, that's good.
Yeah. And I sent a gameplay video, and one of the guns that are in the game are the Singularity Gun. Now, most Singularity Guns have you firing a black hole, and it sucks everything, and this Singularity Gun fires multiple black holes! So you're firing all these black holes at... Multiple, it's like a machine gun black hole.
That sounds a little OP.
Well, everything in Crackdown 3 in Crackdown was OP, if you remember. They also have, in this video, they showed off a new mode in which you have to try and get the highest score you can in 10 minutes by doing the stuff you do in Crackdown. And it's sort of like, remember the demo? You leveled up a lot faster, you know, because it was a demo and you had to, well, I think that's what they do in this multi, it's called, kills for skills, right? Obviously. And I think they did the same thing in which you level up really quickly so that you can fit it in 10 minutes. So that's actually, and it'll have leaderboards and stuff like that. And that's the sort of stuff I like, you know, just taking a break from the game and just playing with the mechanics and seeing how well you can score. They did the same thing with Shadow of Mordor, by the way, with the, they have a time trial version of Shadow of Mordor in the game as well, in which you have to defeat each captain in a set amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Oh, before we do, I had to chuckle at a news item that Scott sent. We were not going to discuss it at length, but Nintendo says they don't want to do PC gaming because, you know, they want to... Yeah. I know why you don't want to do PC gaming. It's the same way you don't want people to do Let's Play videos and you don't want people to do mods. Because PC is where people can do mods. And you really can't do mods on mobile platforms where Nintendo's a lot more comfortable.
Well, if that's their fear, then it's already too late. People have modded the hell out of those games. I mean, maybe it's not legal, but they have done it.
Well, actually, to mod a game is legal. It's the selling it. You can't sell it. That's illegal.
Oh, they didn't sell it. But I mean, you can. There's like fan-made Mario games, fan-made. I think there's a fan-made Kid Icarus game out there, but it's not, you know, official or not sold or anything.
Nintendo comes down on them like a sumo wrestler with their lawyers.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if it's illegal and it involves Nintendo, you better bet that they'll find a way to send a cease and desist your way for it.
Well, it isn't even the fact that it's illegal. I mean, are Let's Play videos illegal? No.
No, but...
But they do the copyright strikes on those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I remember Rachi Kroshaw, in his review of Super Mario Maker, said, you know, would you like to do a level editor and all that stuff? And the kid said, yes, but, you know, what's it called? We've been doing that for years and years. And he says, well, now we're doing it so that all that money can go to us.
Yeah, I mean, asterisk, legal or contains legal loopholes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, like I said, they don't want to do PC not because of any other reason except for the fact they can't control PC. They can control mobiles. You can have mobile mods, but it's a lot harder to do.
I don't really want
to see Nintendo do PC anyways. It's not something that they've ever done before, and it's not something I can imagine
they haven't
that they'd
done
be
it
good
well.
At.
Well, yeah. Oh, well, actually, that's not entirely true. Little story. Three Realms, the guys who did Duke Nukem Forever, or was it id? Either one. I think it was id. Yeah, id did it. They did Super Mario Brothers on PC to show Nintendo, you know, they could do it and make it work really well. Nintendo said no. So they said, okay, they reskinned it, and that's how we got Commander Keen.
Yeah, but that was id.
But that's not Nintendo doing it, that's somebody else doing it.
But I'm just saying, it offered, you know, Nintendo, we could do this for you on PC, and Nintendo said no.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which is to say that other people can do PC, but Nintendo just like, I've never seen them do it in any capacity. And quite frankly, I don't care if they do or not, because I don't want them to produce crap.
You know what I want?
I don't want to have DLC. Well, they have DLC, but...
Yeah, that's one of the news items.
Yeah, I know.
But the thing is, you know what I really want? I want another Commander Keen game, damn it!
Well, maybe talk to the guys at it or whatever.
I don't know. Maybe they think it won't make money, but I think it would make a crap ton of money. I mean, people still play Goodbye Galaxy now.
Essentially, wouldn't that be a Bethesda thing nowadays, since they are the parent company?
Whatever. You know what I mean. Bethesda, whatever. You know, I'm gonna send that out to Bethesda. Make a next gen Commander Keen game.
You better hope it's not in John Carmack's hands, because he's in his own world of trouble.
Oh, well, I don't want it to be American McGee either. Anyways, you know, but people don't know, don't remember that American McGee was also involved in Doom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the first news item. Rebellion has announced it's working on Evil Genius 2. The game is a follow-up to Elixir's real name, Lair Management Strategy Sim, which came out in 2004, courtesy of publisher Sierra. Oh god, Sierra Online. Now I'm having warm, fuzzy, nostalgic feelings. Rebellion, the UK video company behind the Sniper Elite series, picked up the rights to Evil Genius in 2006. Rebellion said in a note to the press, "We'd like to make this super duper clear. This isn't a remaster. Evil Genius 2 will be fully fledged sequel and it won't be free to play. Our focus is currently on a PC release, but as ever, we'll look at other platforms and see what fits and what doesn't. Development only began this spring, so the project is still at an early stage. Rebellion's working on a tech, as Evil Genius 2 is the first real-time strategy game built on its in-house engine, Azura. Rebellion talked a bit about a planned crowdfunding campaign for Evil Genius 2, but it decided not to go ahead a while back. The company explained, "Firstly, we were in the middle of a great big transition in becoming our own publisher, and we needed to put resources into projects that became the Zombie Army Trilogy, Battlezone on PSVR, and Sniper Elite 3 and 4. Secondly, we decided crowdfunding wasn't the way to go. After growing the success of the Sniper Elite series and other Rebellion Games IP, we started to feel it wasn't fair to ask fans to fund a new game if we didn't need them to. With some big projects now at the door and being enjoyed by gamers worldwide, we feel like it's the time to return to the world of Evil Genius." And by the way, if you're confused about their description of it as a real-time lair management strategy sim, just think Dungeon Keeper with James Bond.
Yeah. Evil Genius was a fantastic little game. It was buggy, but you know what? It was ridiculously fun for its concept.
I should have said Dungeon Keep with Blofeld or Dr. Evil, not with James Bond.
Yeah.
James Bond is the one who invades your lair.
Yeah. And then you have to resort to building super spot or building henchmen and traps to kill him.
And oh, by the way, it was also with a heavy 60s flair, so it was like doing the Austin Powers thing.
Yeah, sort of. It reminds me of Tropico, but like on a very much more internal and like almost Sims-y sort of roomish level.
Did you ever play Evil Genius, Scott?
No, I have not. I don't think I've even heard of this game before.
Really?
Wow. Yeah. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Dr. Evil from Austin Powers, the picture, the art there. But yeah, I love Sierra games, and I don't know how I missed this one.
It was back in 2004, and yes, it was partially inspired by Austin Powers, because Austin Powers came out in 1999, 2000? Mm-hmm. No, 1997, I think the first one was. I'm not sure. Anyways, it's irrelevant. Yeah, it came out after the Austin Powers films. And, you know, here's the thing. We haven't had a good lair management game in a while.
Yeah, I mean, it literally is just like that. It had all of the tropes of, like, 60s spy in there. You had, like, rooms that would be, like, full of just, like, inward-pushing walls, spike traps, gas rooms, all sorts of stuff. Plus you'd staff your place with henchmen that would do all sorts of crazy things. And just to see a spy come through and just beat the crap out of your henchmen was also kind of funny.
So we can also discuss the fact they decided not to crowdfund it, not to put it on Kickstarter, which is an interesting idea, because when you don't do that, you're not guaranteed sales, right? When you put something on Kickstarter, but you're basically doing a glorified pre-order, you know, mm-hmm. functionally.
Yeah.
But here they're deciding, no, we're not going to do it. And part of the reason, I think, is that sometimes you run into more monetary issues when you're depending on other people for the money. And I think what they said was that now we're publishing, we're going to publish this game instead of relying on other people to pay for it.
Yeah, and that's a good thing too, because like when you're at the behest of investors, quote unquote, then you have expectations that you have to fulfill for them at certain given times, and that becomes a big problem for a lot of different publishers. With this, you're the only investor is you.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about empty promises, so to speak, like what happened with that Sky game, space game, and it was like a really huge disappointment to so many people that they sued for No Man's Sky. False advertising.
Well, that wasn't crowdfunded, and I don't think. I think that was just Sony See, here's the thing. You can make promises. I can point out someone like Peter Molyneux, who, by the way, also did a crowdfunding project of Goddess. I haven't played that in a long while. I have to see what's going on in it. But basically, you don't have to give people updates every other week before they start accusing you of taking their money and running. That's number one.
I guess the difference between Peter Molyneux's thing and a Kickstarter one, for example, with Pillars, I watched the development from the beginning where they had the concept stuff and then they built it up and they showed all the different steps and the evolution of the game, how they developed it. So you were like, you were involved at least in a observant way or spectator way of seeing what this game come to life. Whereas Peter Molyneux goes, oh, this could be the greatest game ever. And so your own imagination puts this game in your mind, and then you see what that is, and it's like this sudden, that's not what I was thinking at all. Where at least with Kickstarter, you could see why and how they did their path that they did. At least in the case, that's the case with Obsidian when they did
I'm just thinking about Project
of Eternity.
I'd like to suggest a third alternative to that, though, which would be Mighty Number 9. They never promised the best game in the world. They just promised a spiritual successor to Mega Man. And then
They did release screenshots. The screenshots that they had of Mighty Number 9 were nowhere near what was the final release product.
Yes. But what I'm also going to say is that people heard that creator who had a big hand in Mega Man. And they built it up into their mind to where it was going to be. The expectations that people had for Mighty Number 9 were far greater than that game was ever going to be.
You know what, gamers? I really don't care what they want, because if a game won't give them a blowjob and then give them coffee, they'll say it didn't do enough. I really don't care about what gamers think. I think developers should just make the game they want and release it and say, if you like it, we like to play this. Let's see if you like to play it too.
Right. And what I'm saying about Mighty Number 9 is that the hype that grew up around it made it its own worst enemy.
On the other hand, having a trailer in which you're insulting gamers by calling them nerds and idiots, what's it called, doesn't help matters.
No, it doesn't. That was marketing, and whoever did that should have been fired on the day that was released. No, they should have been fired before that was released.
I am glad that this company is not just jumping right to the Kickstarter thing and they're deciding, you know, we don't need to do this, so we're not going to, and it's good to see that.
You know, Kickstarter is an interesting risk. For some people it works, but for some people, and actually for a lot of people, it does not. Yeah, I'm excited, and I'm happy to see the way they're going. Rebellion is proving to be a pretty worthwhile company, and I'd happily buy Evil Genius Tea from them.
People used to say the same about Valve. Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
It's not putting my. I've played a lot of games from Rebellion at this point, and
Looks like
what? Say it again, Scott.
TJ's just saying it looks like a good game developer.
Oh, I know.
TJ's just saying.
Well, here's the thing. Actually, you know what? Is Valve a game developer anymore?
No, at this point, they're pretty much Rebellion. A publisher.
I mean, yes, they do their updates to the one or two games like Counter-Strike and Team Fortress, but no, if next year they announced Half-Life 3 at E3, I will be very surprised.
Yeah. But I think there's a huge difference between companies like Valve and companies like Rebellion. And I would put Rebellion in the same ring as Obsidian at this point. They just do pretty good work They just do pretty good work, and they haven't really given me a reason not to trust them at this point.
You know who my You know my most published developer slash I don't know if I don't know if they're self publishing now, but Monolith has become my number one. They're Warner Brothers. That's right. Because here's the thing. I think about the stuff that they've done, they did that? They did No One Lives Forever. They did Tron 2.0. You know, they did all these games. It's like, oh, they did that too? You know? I mean, it's very surprising what Monolith has been doing. And here's the thing. for, you know, Shadow of Mordor was actually outside of their comfort zone. And I hate to quote zero punctuation again, but, you know, they were doing a heavily licensed product based on a movie. And face it, the Lord of the Rings that they're basing their characters are from the movie. You know, I mean, Gollum is exactly the way Gollum is in the movie and all that stuff. And they took a huge risk, because not only is it a huge license, but you also have dozens and dozens of nitpicking nerds who know every single thing about Tolkien lore, who are ready to jump down their throats.
I still have a friend that tells me everything wrong with those movies all the time.
Well, I can't stand the movies, and it has nothing to do with the content. Even though, let me put it this way. Whenever you can tell when Peter Molyneux strays away from the original work because he cannot write to save his life.
You mean Peter Jackson?
Peter Jackson, whatever. Peter Molyneux, Peter Jackson, same guy, really.
No, they're not.
Yes, they are. They both overproduce. They overproduce, and it's like Cecil B. DeMille. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. What were you about to say, TJ?
There's a big difference between Fable and Meet the Feebles.
We're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Nobody can find the source code for Icewind Dale 2 from Kotaku. The people who make enhanced editions of old role-playing games like Baldur's Gate and Planescape Torment want to do the same thing for Icewind Dale 2. There's just one problem. Nobody knows where to find the code. Beamdog, a Canadian publisher best known for releasing snazzy new versions of old Infinity Engine RPGs, like the ones mentioned above, is looking to re-release Icewind Dale 2 with enhanced graphics and other improvements. But Beamdog's CEO, Trent Oster, says his team can't find the source code for Icewind Dale 2. Without that code, he says they can't make any sort of enhanced edition of the game. The game came out during a time of financial turbulence for its publisher, Interplay, which would go on to shut down the game's development studio, Black Isle, a year later in 2003. Some of Black Isle's staff then left to found Obsidian Entertainment. Perhaps as a result of that turbulence, or confusion over who owns what, Icewind Dale 2 has simply disappeared. Although anyone can buy and download Icewind Dale 2 on GOG, there's no simple way to extract the source code from finished copies of the game. Because the code is all compiled, the data is inaccessible. So Icewind Dale 2 remains in limbo, at least until someone finds an old floppy disk in their attic.
Right, for anybody who might wonder, you can't just decompile it because the data will still be lost when you try to decompile it. So they actually need the source code for it in order to do, if they want to do it, you know, they can do it from scratch, but that would take a lot of time and money. And basically what Beamdog does is they just pretty up the original code.
Mm-hmm.
And it's too expensive to re-engineer the code as well. This is one of those things where you just feel like somebody messed up somewhere and lost the backup, or they didn't care. And so this got, it's got shoved into a box somewhere, probably, hopefully, you know, not destroyed.
Oh, yeah, well, that's the thing you always have to consider, is maybe they wiped the hard drives from all the computers as part of the shutdown, and, oh, guess what? Icewind Dale 2 was on that.
And, yeah, that is a possibility.
I mean, I'm surprised that no one from Obsidian has chimed in on this yet, because, I mean, they were responsible for a lot of big games like that. For anyone who doesn't know, Black Isle is also now Obsidian, formerly Black Isle, was also responsible for the first two Fallout games.
I mean, at least the game isn't totally lost. Like you said, you can get it at good old games, but the problem with that is that it's, as the machines get better, the game starts to look crappier and more pixelated, and, you know, sometimes you do need that HD cleanup.
Oh, yeah. Like, I remember I bought Fallout 1 and 2 on Steam a while back, and the level of workarounds I had to do to get that game into HD form was just, I had to go in and mess with README files, like, for about a week or two.
See, but that's what you get when you don't get from Good Old Games, because Good Old Games always optimizes their games for current computers. See, there's your first mistake right there, getting it from Steam.
Yeah, I know, but I was a fool back then, and I just wanted to play Fallout.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, all of a sudden, now I want to play Master of Magic.
I guess this just means they'll have to focus on Baldur's Gate 3, then, instead of the enhanced editions of these other games.
Here's the thing. For for those of you who don't know, see, Baldur's Gate was the RPG that they released, while Icewind Dale was more of a tactical strategy, you know, in which there was less story and more about you're facing a bunch of these monsters, how can you take them out? It was basically a dungeon crawl. More of a dungeon crawl than Baldur's Gate was.
There's still a story, but yeah.
Well, I know. The focus, though, was on combat in that. In Baldur's Gate, it was more, is Imwen going to get along with Jahira? That sort of thing.
Yeah, it's just, there really was a story. I mean, I thought it was a really good story, but, you know, and the dungeon crawl one was more later on where they, I think it was Heart of Winter, and you're, like, teleported to this temple thing, and you go through a dungeon, and you're trying to just go through the levels, and there's that was the dungeon crawl expansion.
If I remember, by the way, Icewind Dale 2 was also extremely buggy when it first came out on the levels of Arcana of Steamworks, and if I remember correctly, I remember a lot of people complaining about the bugs in Icewind Dale 2.
I don't remember any bugs, but I guess there probably were. I don't remember encountering any.
Did you buy it at launch? That's the question.
I don't think it was launched, but it wasn't that long after.
You know, that reminds me, you know, of everybody tells me that one of the greatest RPGs that it was ever released after it was patched up was Arcanum, and I still haven't played that.
I don't know much about that one. I haven't heard of it.
You've never heard of Arcanum of Steamworks? And
yeah, people have gone on about that one.
Arcanum of Steamworks and Magic Obscura. That came out in 2001. It was by Troika, by the way, the same people who did Vampire the Masquerade. And it was incredibly buggy. But when it was patched up, people said it's amazing.
Hmm.
And it's on Steam. And on good old games. They compare it to Fallout 1 and 2, by the way.
Huh. Sounds like something I would enjoy then. Yeah, I like, for what it was worth, I enjoyed working through the problems of Fallout 1 and 2. I would probably enjoy working through Arcanum.
It's a little more Diablo-esque, though, in the look. Because it has that quick bar with the red and the blue for Arcanum, for health and magic.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Breath of the Wild players will learn more about Zelda in the Champion's Ballad DLC. This from BG247. A 17 second The Zelda of, I'm sorry, The Legend of Zelda.
The Zelda of Legend, there you go.
Yeah, that's weird. Breath of the Wild clip for the Champion's Ballad has tweeted by Nintendo on July 8th. The Champion's Ballad DLC, named after the ballad played by the minstrel cast in the core game, will contain additional story and dungeon elements, and its focus is on the champions. Their goal is to protect the Kingdom of Hyrule and its ancient relics. Zelda is the commander of the group, which consists of Daruk, Mipha, Revali, and Urbosa, and of course her appointed knight, Link. As the Master Trials DLC Pack 1, the Champion's Ballad is only available as part of the expansion pass. If you don't already have it, it will run you $20.
Okay, so
that's like a prequel thing?
Yeah, for those of you who don't know, there's a big backstory as to what happened with, basically, what they're talking about here is how Ganon came to power. There was a big battle, and the heroes lost, and most of them were killed. So it sounds like they're planning on, exploring that, because it's only vaguely spoken about in the game. I mean, everybody talks about it at some point or another, but like, it's never actually blatantly shown to you.
At least not in a cohesive narrative.
Well, the question is if it's going to take place in modern times and you're dealing with the group after those events, or if it's going to be like time travel and you're going to go back and experience it for yourself.
Yeah. It sounds a little bit more like the latter, which, in which case it's going to be the, I don't want to give it a black cloud, but it's going to be the Rogue One of Zelda Adventures.
I was thinking about it was going to be the Hyrule Reach of Zelda Adventures.
That's a better one.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't played Halo Reach, so I have no idea.
Well, Halo Reach is a prequel which deals with Harvest. And for those of you who don't know, Harvest was glassed by the Covenant. And it was completed. The entire planet's surface was glassed. And a lot of the game was just your team getting picked off one by one until, spoiler for a game that was released in 2009, or is it 2010? Anyways, the last moment of the game, the last level of the game, which happens after the credits, by the way, is actually one of the best moments in video gaming history, in which you're there with your dog tag and the mission is survive. That's it. And if I remember, the mission description is Spartans never die. And what happens is you keep fighting and fighting and fighting against endless hordes of Covenant until you finally get killed and overwhelm you. And then the ending of the game happens, in which it shows your helmet on the ground, and then it flashes forward 38 years and the planet is once again green and verdant, and Catherine Halsey talks about how no one knows about the role you played in defeating the Covenant. And, you know, but she knows that you probably felt you succeeded, you know, and it's a really touching. I mean, a lot of hardcore gamers were misty-eyed at that.
You glossed over a big point, though. Everything in Halo Reach leads up to Halo 1. Everything they do is specifically in helping the last remnants of humanity and the Master Chief that is in the rest of the series survive long enough to kill the Covenant.
Well, before you do that level in which you just have to fight everybody, it does go back and it replays the beginning of Halo 1, in which Commander Keyes is talking to Halsey and what's it called? They're heading towards a Halo, and then the credits roll, and then you're back and you're alone on Reach with just the Covenant swarming all over the place. And it's your job just to take out as many as you can before they eventually overwhelm you and die.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really a beautiful moment. I mean, if you ever want to, Scott, just search on YouTube Halo Reach Lone Wolf, and that's the ending. Okay. And you can, it's like I said, you actually had to be there. Here's the thing, Halo 3 ODST, I was pretty sure that the rookie was going to die. It felt like that game, and it felt like to me they didn't have the balls to do it. In Halo Reach, they said, okay, we're going to kill off everybody, and at the end, the hero dies, a heroic death.
And yeah, well, I mean, it is like Rogue One in that game. They're stealing the Death Star plans, or in Halo Reach's case, they're
escaping.
They're helping everybody else escape with Master
Chief. Well, they're helping Cortana escape, actually. Oh, by the way, there's an Easter egg that if in the scene with Keyes and Cortana, if you hold the analog right stick, it'll pan over to show Halo Master Chief in his cryogenic tube. There's also one there's one I actually successfully did a couple of times, in which you have to do some specific things while flying around New Mombasa, and if you do it correctly, when you go into a building, all the Covenant are having a disco party.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate thing is you have to interrupt it because the thing that you need to destroy is inside the disco party. What's funny is that when you destroy it, or if you kill one of the Covenant, the record scratches and everybody stops and stares at you before they all attack. It's like you're crashing their party. So anyways. Go ahead, CJ.
But yeah, like, new champion content on Zelda. Anyone who has played through that game and knows about the champion, the champions of Breath of the Wild are pretty much the cornerstones of that game. They're all awesome. They're all cool. Urbosa is a lot of people's favorite and mine.
Are you saying they're the Triforce of the game?
There's four of them.
There's five of them. What are you talking about? Six, actually. There's six, so it still works.
Oh, yeah, then there you go. So no.
There's four champions, and then there's Link.
And Zelda. Zelda the Commander.
Zelda and Link are like two different things. They don't count.
Yeah, but there's still six people in that group.
Luke, there's a whole... All right, Jonah, there's like a whole thing. Go look up Cass's song. He tells you about it. He's all like...
Okay.
He's not going to.
Let me ask you a question.
Oh, I know.
Let me ask you a question. You still haven't gotten the Switch yet, right, Scott?
No, I have not.
You know, now that I'm thinking about it, you know, you might as well put off the getting the Switch until they release the inevitable Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild Game of the Year edition with everything included.
Yeah, I think I've been seeing some bundle deals being bandied about.
Oh, okay, well, that too. I was thinking about the actual game itself, like,
mm-hmm.
with the game with all the DLC, but yeah, I mean, if you're waiting for a bundle version.
Yeah, that's good idea.
More importantly, they're about to release an amiibo pack with all of the champions that they mentioned there, so I'm super hyped for that.
That is awesome.
I wonder what it's going to cost in Black Friday. On that note, they still haven't put the Xbox One X on pre-order yet. I'm still waiting. And I have $70 discount on Amazon. I might get it through that. And also, they also do trade-ins of the Xbox One. So I could probably get the Xbox One X for like $250 to $300. And one of the best things is that since all my games are on the cloud, you know, and all my game saves are on the cloud, I don't even have to worry about porting over stuff. I just download everything back again.
Hmm.
That's one of the great things about owning a PS4, Xbox One, and having a Steam account is that if you change your computer, you no longer have to worry about porting all your games or installing all your games. All you do is go to Steam or whatever and just say, okay, I want this game downloaded, and your save game files will come with it.
Mm-hmm. That is cool.
I mean, today's kids are spoiled. They didn't know the pain of having to move over to a new console or new PC or something.
They find their cartridge and the batteries died and their save games are gone.
Well, even so, it was hard in hell to, you know, you'd have to do a lot on your PC. Even if you had the install disk, it's like, oh, wait, I have to do my save games too. I have to transfer those too. Now you just say, oh, I'll just download Steam and boom, there it is.
Yeah, I used to keep my save games on a disk for PC. That was a tough time, especially when the disk, when I kept using the disk, I had like a hard drive and it eventually got corrupted and too many bad sectors and I had to throw the disk out.
Oh, how about having to configure your COM ports for a game?
Mm-hmm.
That was a big pain of Master of Magic. Oh, it's not going to do it because this COM port isn't ready. You have to do this, you have to do that. You have to go into MS-DOS and rearrange everything. Thank you, Tosh, for the GUI. Anyways, we're going to move on to the last item. Where are all the Nintendo Switch game ports? And this comes from Ars Technica. With retailers continuing to sell out of Nintendo Switch hardware pretty much the moment it came into stock, and Nintendo promising shipments of 10 million consoles by the end of the fiscal year, you'd think third-party publishers would be falling over themselves to port existing and upcoming games and franchises over Nintendo's hit system. Players can find some major multi-platform ports of Switch's list of upcoming games, including older titles like Skyrim and Rocket League, sports games like NBA 2K18 and FIFA 18, and family titles like Lego Marvel Super Heroes 2 and Just Dance 2018, and so on. And the Switch already has versions of Minecraft, NBA Playgrounds, and plenty of indie games that also appear on other consoles. But for every upcoming major console release that is getting a Nintendo Switch port, there's just as many seemingly sticking with Microsoft's and Sony's platforms. For the most part, third-party publishers are still treating the Switch version of their biggest games as a completely optional addition to the big two console options. Part of the reason is raw horsepower, as Asobo's studio's chief creative officer made explicitly clear when talking about the upcoming A Plague Tale: Innocence in a Gaming Bolt interview. For those who don't know, that's the game in which they turn the Crebain version from God of War into an entire game, except with rats instead of dark flying things. I know that Scott, TJ saw it as well. A lack of hardware power is probably why games like Middle Earth: Shadow of War and Raiders of the Broken Planet are skipping the Switch. But the horsepower excuse doesn't work for every game that is skipping the Switch. Titles like Mega Man Legacy Collection and South Park: The Fractured But Whole don't seem like they would tax the low-powered Switch hardware, but neither game has any plans for Nintendo's system. Konami's Pro Evolution Soccer isn't that much more technically advanced than FIFA, but while EA Soccer series is coming to the Switch this year, Konami's is not.
You know South Park is not family friendly enough to go on the Switch at all.
What about Mega Man then?
Yeah, that's sad, isn't it? Mega Man is not coming to Nintendo Switch. That's just, wow.
They've only re-released Mega Man in different forms on a Nintendo system every 5 years or so for the last 20 years.
You know, here's the thing. I'm wondering about, you know, Nintendo, maybe with the Capcom 5, Nintendo's telling Capcom, no, we don't want it. I mean, we're still feeling the effects of the Capcom 5. That's why you don't have Mega Man in the Super Smash Brothers, because of the way Capcom screwed Nintendo over.
Mega Man is still in the Super Smash Brothers. He was in Smash 5.
When was that?
That was the last one that was released.
Really? Okay.
Yeah,
I remember it. Yes, I remember that.
Okay. But still, you know, Resident Evil. Come on.
Oh, I know.
Resident Evil 4. But hey, at least they got
There's signs that Capcom and Nintendo have started to mend their relationship. What with Mega Man being in there and the Mega Man games have appeared on the Nintendo Virtual Console, and I would almost argue that Nintendo probably doesn't want the Legacy Collection because they probably know they could sell those games one apiece on the Virtual Console.
I'm just wondering if the size of the game might be an issue. Because remember, we're still dealing with small memory size on the Switch, which makes me wonder when they're going to have something like a 250 gigabyte Switch. That may be small for an Xbox, very small for an Xbox One or a PS4, but it'd be massive on the Switch.
Yeah, right now your only option is to get a 250 gig micro SD card, which they're a little pricey. Yeah,
and it costs as much as the Switch in some places.
I don't know.
But we all know that Nintendo really doesn't go after third party, because it's like, they still have the mental attitude like, oh, third party is bad. They're not buying our game.
Yeah, I mean, that is something that I think about, is like, I wouldn't even consider a Plague Tale Innocence on the Switch, because it just doesn't look like a Nintendo game. It's a game about children surviving rats in the Inquisition. So, not necessarily.
The other problem is, you know, even though they have something like Minecraft, people may look at the Minecraft for, I mean, the only reason why somebody might play Minecraft on the Switch is because they don't have it anywhere else. I mean, Scott, you have, and it's doubly, Microsoft opened it up so that everybody can play it. Well, not on Sony, because Sony thinks that there are child predators in Minecraft. But, you know, Scott, if you got the Switch, would you get Minecraft for the Switch?
No, I already have it on PC. I don't need it for the console. I really like the keyboard mouse interface for Minecraft, and going to a controller. A lot of times when I play first person games on a controller, it's very slow moving and very awkward. And
cut that part out. Let's say that the Nintendo Switch used the keyboard and mouse. You still wouldn't pay for it again, would you?
No, because I already have it. Why do I need it again?
I mean, it might be nice for friends who have the Switch and get Minecraft, because now you can play on the PC and they can play on the Switch and all that. But, you know, a lot of was anybody really asking for the Wii U version of Mass Effect 3? Especially when 1 and 2 weren't available? I mean, that's the problem. If you don't have a relationship with third-party support, then your customer base isn't going to care either. Or they're going to play it on something else.
Third-party support is super important. And I think Nintendo is only just starting to realize how important it is.
They should have realized that. I mean, I can't imagine these games that were originally, they were Capcom, Konami, and Square, and Enix. And I played these games as a child on Nintendo, and now they've gone away from most of them anyway, so they still have a relationship, I guess, with Square Enix to have Dragon's Quest, but the rest of them, it's like, did they not see, I guess they didn't see or didn't care for the loss of finances through these games that I used to play all the time, and now they don't have them, and it's just like, why bother with Nintendo? They should do third party developers. It just makes no sense.
But the thing is that Nintendo has created such a niche for itself that other companies don't try to imitate that niche, you know? And when they do, it's a failure. Here's the thing. There have been successful kids games on Microsoft. I mean, the Kinect game in which you blow up, you know, for 2 and 3 year olds, you know. But I'm saying, like, you know, like we were making fun of the Fox game, right? Because it was an attempt and it was a poor attempt, you know? I mean, Microsoft and Sony think, well, you know, we don't have to make games like Super Mario Brothers because they're doing it already and our fans aren't going to play it, which is a lie. I mean, you've seen how,
Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy was one of the hottest selling games of last month, so.
I know, that's... but see, there is a want there. I mean, like Rayman, you know, was huge on Xbox One and PS4.
Yeah. I agree with you. That's what I'm saying is that I agree with you. People want to play those games still. They want to see them in different ways. If anything, Crash Bandicoot Insane Trilogy is like the perfect evidence for your argument.
I mean, you know why Bastion did so well? It's because people wanted to play Zelda, and Bastion was the best way they could play Zelda without having to get a Nintendo console.
I would agree with that.
Go ahead, Scott.
Well, Bastion felt more like a Metroid than a Zelda, but I guess I do see your point there. And
well, I'm not talking about the gameplay. I'm talking about the style and the charm. You know, that's what I'm talking about.
Oceanhorn is a lot like Zelda Wind Waker. I'm playing that one, and you collect little hearts, and you got a boat, and you're sailing around, and that one is it feels like it's a Zelda or you know Wind Waker Zelda.
You know what? Yeah. What the funny thing is, Scott, is that hardcore gamers aren't going to play Wind Waker. They're going to play Assassin's Creed 4 Black Flag, which is Wind Waker. It's Assassin's Creed Wind Waker, and no one really seems to notice that they copied everything from Wind Waker for Assassin's Creed 4.
So there's a guy waving a wand to make music in the air?
No, but there's similar little touches, because it's basically a pirate game, but you're doing all the same stuff. You're exploring the ocean, you're doing stuff in the ocean, you're exploring islands. You know, yeah, there's killing and assassination.
Wind Waker doesn't own those concepts of exploring.
No, but the gameplay style. Here's the thing: Wind Waker, a lot of it is just swimming around, being in a boat around the ocean, and that's almost all what you're doing. So Assassin's Creed 4. If you ever play it, you're gonna say, "Wait a minute, this is a lot like Wind Waker, except I'm an assassin and a pirate." You know, but that's the only way to get the quote-unquote hardcore gamers to play something like Zelda's Wind Waker. Just make it hardcore. Yeah, I'm a pirate. And, oh, yeah, I have to buy decorations for my ship. And I have to find treasure maps. And I have to find clothes for my pirate. You know, come on.
I will say this as a Switch owner. Nintendo, for my perception and what I've seen in my library and what's available to me, they're making a bigger pass at third party and indie content than they ever have before.
Well, here's the problem.
And that's saying a lot for them.
Well, here's the thing. A lot of the indie content you're talking about is just indie developers saying, oh, you know, we're just going to port over to the Switch and make an easy buck. I mean, you have cheap mobile games appearing on the PlayStation Store, which Jim Sterling has railed against, you know.
No, it's not the same thing at all. I'm talking about new Switch games that have actually come out, like stuff like Snipperclips, that Snake game that came out a while back. There's quite a few out there that are new indie games that Nintendo is actually cultivating in their eShop.
They're not exclusive. I mean, you could get the Snake game on PC, Xbox One, PlayStation. You know?
No, I know, but the fact that...
Did anybody ask for The Binding of Isaac? Seriously?
No, and that's bizarre, but but I'm just saying that from my perception, Nintendo is making a bigger pass at this than they ever have before, and I'm not saying that they're not late to the party, but they are starting to maybe start to figure it out a little bit, which is... my optimistic point of view, to say the least.
Well, so long as you're giving them a licensing fee, they'll be happy to put it on the Switch. And that's the other major thing, too, is I think Nintendo probably has stricter licensing fees than Microsoft and Sony. Because Microsoft and Sony are constantly battling each other for the hearts and minds of the indie space, right? And Microsoft got in trouble with, you know, people complaining about them starting to have these stricter rules about you can only have it on Microsoft, you can't have it on anybody else for a month or something like that. You know, Microsoft started relaxing that rule about have to be on this console only for 3 months or some some ridiculous thing like that. You know, because they realize, oh crap, we're damaging our store with this, and we're getting a lot of bad press with people like Phil Fair saying he'll never ever 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 put a game on the on the Xbox console again before putting it on the, or Jonathan Blow with The Witness. Yeah, Witness is going to be on the Xbox, is going to be on PlayStation only. Oh yeah, it's on PC, but that's not, oh, it's, by the way, it's on Xbox One a year later. Mm-hmm. But here's, you know, the thing is that the Switch should be a go-to for a lot of indie developers. And yeah, there are a lot of Steam games that are being ported over to the Switch, but it doesn't seem like Nintendo is asking for them. It's more like they're asking Nintendo, and Nintendo's saying, okay.
Which is more than Nintendo was doing before, is what I'm saying.
That's true.
Like, they still have a long way to go, but for the very, for one of the first times that I've seen in my, I had a Wii, and I had a Wii U, and I had a Nintendo DS. It finally looks like they're starting to look outside their own walls and realize where the market is, or at least where a good portion of the market is, and what kind of money they're missing out on by not embracing it.
We'll see, because here's the thing. 1 year later, we'll know. Okay? 1 year later, we'll know, because Nintendo does Zelda, Mario, okay? And it better not be, oh, by the way, guess what? Pikmin 4! No. No, not even really Kid Icarus.
They should have done a Kid Icarus.
But I'm just saying, how about a completely new IP? A completely new one that no one knows anything about. See if you can capture imagination with some new character. Because you can't just run, because that's what Wii did, and that's what the Wii U did, and that's what Nintendo 64 did. You know? Mario, you know what they're Zelda, going, Mario.
You know what they're going to do in a year, and then this is going to make you groan so hard, Jonah.
Oh,
but
wait, you're
going to
say, oh, they're going to switch it up and put out a Luigi game?
Nope, they're going to do something they've never done before with a home console, and it's going to be basically printing money. They're going to make a Pokemon RPG for the Switch.
Well, that's, you know, what I'd like to see, a Pokemon MMO. And I, you know what, I'm willing to bet you that's what people would pay the online fee for, is a Pokemon MMO. With
Pokemon. I mean, at the very least, they've never put a Pokemon on a home console, and what that's true. Which
Pokemon is really hot in World of Warcraft. Basically, you capture pets, you train them up, and then you can fight other people with your pets. That's Pokemon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you capture these monsters from Overland. You could do that and make an base an entire game around that for a Pokemon MMO. And if they did that, I'm willing to bet you kids would say yes, we'll pay $5 a month. For, and that would be 5 minus 12. That would be $60 a year. In fact, if they wanted to hide the $60, but they would pay money per month for that. I guarantee you, that would make for them the Nintendo Online Pass well worth it.
I'm gonna say this. I know I don't like Pokemon very much, and I know you don't like Pokemon very much, and I know Scott probably doesn't care for it very much. But if you told people that you couldn't get the next Pokemon unless you got the Switch, 2 billion people would demand that Nintendo put out more Switches so that they could buy that game.
I'm not sure it has that kind of, because the consoles always come first. It wasn't Pokemon people bought the DS for. It wasn't Pokemon that people bought the 3DS for. I think if you told them though, if we're gonna have a Pokemon MMO, it would sell better than it would make much more money than Pokemon Go did. And oh, by the way, they're expanding Pokemon Go in the latest news. I didn't report that one, but yeah. And Pokemon Go was a really bad game, but people still played it. It was really bad. It was buggy as hell, and it was boring, but people went for it.
My wife loved that game for like 3 weeks, and then never played it again.
Well, yeah, people were still playing it. And I should install it on my new Galaxy S8 just to see how it's changed, and see if, and now that I'm in a new state, let's see if there's anything different here.
Apparently not. It's like, it really should have been more like reactive to the environment it's in, and it seems more related to traffic and how close you are to certain hotspots or whatever.
At least they finally put a feature in the game that it detects that if you're driving, or it detects if you're traveling at a certain mile per hour per se, and it will realize that you're driving and turn off.
Okay.
which is a good safety feature if you don't recall that people were getting into crashes and having horrible things happen.
You know, I'm actually against that because it's a Darwin Award, and you know what? If you're stupid enough to be playing a Pokemon Go game while driving, then there's something seriously wrong with you. I'm on the highway. Ooh, look, there's a Charmander on the shoulder.
Yeah.
There's some really stupid people out there.
Sometimes you have to protect them from themselves.
Yes.
I just, you know, I still haven't bought a 3DS yet. I wonder when is going to be a good time to buy the 3DS. Maybe this coming Black Friday. It'll be like $100.
Maybe.
I wonder how much the Switch is going to be during Black Friday.
It's going to be the same price because they're going to be releasing a Mario game around the same time, and there's going to be no need to lower the price when everybody already wants it.
Yeah, Mario Party. Woohoo.
While we're on the subject of Nintendo, that we know that Nintendo SNES Classic is coming out, so how much you want to bet they're just going to do the same thing they did with the NES Classic and limit the supply, and then just those people will just buy and scalp it on eBay for like $500.
Well, thanks for reminding me. I have to pre-order it as soon as it's available for pre-order.
Mm-hmm.
Just so I can sell it again. I had a Super Nintendo. I mean, I could buy a Super Nintendo for $10 in a video game store.
Yeah.
You don't have all the games with it, but
there's something nice about having that whole little console with a bunch of games all in one neat little box, and you don't have to worry about cartridges.
Yeah, but this time make the cord for the controller a lot longer.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
I think I read somewhere that it's actually twice as long as it was for the NES Classic, which is great.
Oh, so it's going to be 2 inches instead of 1 inch. Great.
Yes. One more inch to deal with.
That's what she said. Anyway, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history article. We enjoy your feedback. So leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, there's open space for... fuck me. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave some iTunes comments. And Harry, I'm going to email you for your address. Patrick, I'm just going to email you the code, because that's all you need to do with it. No postal mail needed. That's the positive for yours. You just get The Sims 4. Anyways, I am at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
And I am at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.